are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
But if we're going to talk about Thor, do we need to take our shirts off to do this podcast then?
It wouldn't hurt.
The cops won't know not to arrest with your shirt on.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I need one of those like bail bonds t-shirts that says do not arrest this man.
Yeah, because that will help the police to not arrest you.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennan. I'm joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm doing fantastic, Benjamin. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Pretty damn good there, laddie. What's new with you?
Not a whole lot. I witnessed a hit and run at the gas station tonight. That was about the highlight of my evening. I'm talking to you, so the hit and run is still the highlight of my evening, but I'm doing okay. We got some third baseman to talk here.
You know, I don't know how I should feel about that. I feel pretty bad that you ran someone over because, you know, that's not what we want out of this podcast, Evan, so you gotta watch that.
No, it wasn't me. I was simply a witness to a crime. I was not actually... Don't send the RotoCop on my tail. It wasn't me.
We're definitely going to send a RotoCop, and I don't really know how reliable of a witness you are, so...
I need one of those, like, bail bonds t-shirts that says, do not arrest this man.
Yeah, because that will help the police to not arrest you. Anyway, also joined by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good. We got some real baseball going on. The results don't really matter, but at least it's actual games.
Well, I heard on ESPN Radio in New York today that Michael Kay, the voice of the Yankees, was pretty excited that the Yankees are like 5-0, and he's like, "Oh yeah, they're 5-0. I'm super happy." Like it's
oh yeah, it matters, all right.
Oh yeah, man, it real matters. Oh yeah, the only thing that matters is injuries, and that's for fantasy purposes.
Exactly.
I had someone asking, "Well, how can you do a podcast when the season hasn't started?" I was like, "Well, there's stuff to talk about, like injuries and such." They're like, how many injuries could really happen? Well, I mean, Kevin Gausman got run over at the plate, so yeah.
And I mean, in the Mets, you could just go down the line of all the MRIs there.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about that.
Did anybody see the tweet where they said that DeGrom may not be, like, up to speed for the first start of the year for opening day?
Watch your whore mouth, all right?
I think he's going to take the turn in the rotation the first way through, just not... as the number one starter.
Yeah, no, I mean, when we've got Thor, and I know we're getting way off base of the third base preview we got in store for you guys tonight. Thor out here throwing absolute gas.
But if we're going to talk about Thor, do we need to take our shirts off to do this podcast then?
It wouldn't hurt. Anyway.
Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
I can be reached at EvFWFB. And in the rate and review section of this podcast, leave us 5 stars.
What about you, Ray?
I am at Ray_Kuhn_28 on Twitter.
And I can be found at BBrennisFWFB on Twitter. Guys, let's jump in. We've already stated that we're going to be talking about third base today. Obviously, there's going to be a couple players that are multi-position eligible that we really aren't going to cover. We're going to state what tier we have them in, but we're not really going to go into depth about them. You know, a player like Alex Bregman or Jose Ramirez, because we've already talked about them. But why don't we jump in? We're going to start talking about the first tier. In the first tier, we all have Manny Machado, Chris Bryant, and Nolan Arenado. But Evan and I also have Jose Ramirez and Josh Donaldson. So if you don't mind me asking, Ray, what reason do you not have Donaldson in that top tier?
Well, I think the health issues are kind of – I think Donaldson's kind of gotten past that. I think second half of last year he showed that we can trust him at least as far as his skills. Again, I'm not saying that he's not going to take another trip to the DL at some point. In 2018, the supporting cast not like Jose Bautista did really any good last year, but the supporting cast isn't the greatest. He's not running anymore. As far as the batting average, he's a little down compared to the other guys that we have up there in Tier 1. So to me, he's kind of just that next level. I still trust the power. I'm not sure if he's going to get 100 RBIs again, but I don't know that he's much more than a 275 hitter where the other guys are going to come close to or hit 300. So that was kind of where I drew the line.
What about you? What are your thoughts on Donaldson, Evan?
I mean, the injury absolutely derailed the first half of the season for him. And if you take a look at, you know, second half statistics as far as home runs, he was third in the majors behind guys named Giancarlo and JD. He was top 10 in RBIs. He was just a very solid contributor, and we're not that far off from drafting this guy in the first round. I understand that he does, you know, have the injury bugaboo that's kind of followed him around, but if at this time next year we're talking about drafting him where we're talking about drafting Chris Bryant, then I don't think anybody would be particularly shocked. And I think that if you are going to get Donaldson at a third round price, that I would snap him up absolutely everywhere I could, because you've probably built yourself a pretty good base with your first two picks. So I don't see why he wouldn't, you know, be on anybody's team in the third round.
Yeah, no, I'm not against taking Donaldson in the third round. But to me, the other guys are more first, second round. I'm going to maybe make a little bit more of an effort to target them. If Donaldson falls to me in the third round and it makes sense, I'm going to take him and be happy about it.
But, I mean, if you take a look at just, like, statistics, like, if I had you sit down and write a blank stat line for each of these guys, and I said Donaldson and Manny Machado, I think when you compare it at the end of the day, I mean, it kind of depends on what you think about Machado's steals, but I think those stat lines would look the same. And I understand people are taking Machado as a shortstop. Chris Bryant, I think he could do maybe not as many steals as what Bryant could do, but I think as far as the power output, could definitely produce him in those departments. Batting average could, you know, be about the same. I just think Donaldson's getting unfairly knocked this draft season.
Well, I mean, to me, the two things, I have the other guys maybe, if you want to say 10 to 15 points higher in the batting average, but I think there's more potential with Bryant Machado, and to me the bigger thing is the age, and that Donaldson has 7 years on Machado and he has 6 on Bryant. So, I mean, maybe I'm unfairly haircutting him a little bit based on the age, but to me, I just rather get somebody still on the ascension instead of the descension.
For me, personally, I actually have Josh Donaldson ranked higher than Manny Machado, and that's just because Machado had a down year last year, and obviously Donaldson had the injury, but Donaldson still ended up having, you know, a better fantasy season, in my opinion, than what Manny Machado had, and Manny Machado actually played. Now, him being able to play over at shortstop will be a big benefit for fantasy owners, but in terms of ranking the players at the outcome of this season, I still think that if Donaldson's able to stay healthy, he's still an MVP-level candidate, even with the other players that are gone from the team. I mean, they still have Morales, and they did bring in a couple bats, but I still think that Donaldson has the ability to do well. And it's not a knock on Manny, but he's unlikely to run. If he doesn't hit well like he did last year, which kind of came out of nowhere, I'm not really sure what's going to happen. At least Donaldson had a reason for not hitting one. That's because of an injury. We still don't really understand why Manny had such a bad hitting season. So,
I think it was more the first half of the year.
Well, are you talking about for Manny or for Donaldson?
For Manny.
I mean, Manny, the BABIP absolutely killed him, and there's been a lot of people that have pointed to his BABIP numbers, but I forget exactly who it was. Maybe it was Spader on Twitter that had, like, tables that showed he was just smoking them, you know, into these, you know, holes that weren't there. You know, the shortstop would eat them up for Machado. The reason I thought you said that is because, real quick on Donaldson, like, I think everybody, you know, has this idea of, okay, he was hurt, the first half kind of sucked. He still had an 868 OPS in the first half. So even in this, you know, like I said, this mindset of, oh, yeah, he was pretty terrible in the first half, and he really was kind of, you know, MVP caliber in the second half. 868 OPS, you know, if that's the floor, I mean, I think that's great.
Do you have anything else to add, Ray?
I think I'm pretty good on that. I mean, I don't think Machado's really going to run either. I mean, there's some credence. I mean, I think for both of them, that free agent year, what's going to happen with that. But, again, I think if I end up with any of these guys, I'm not exactly going to be disappointed about it.
What would you guys say about Nolan Arenado or Chris Bryant? Is there really anything to discuss with them? Or are these guys just someone that you're going to plug, you're going to play, you're not really going to think about anything else other than the productivity that they're going to bring you?
I'm not really thinking much about either one of them. I mean, Arenado's a hell of a hitter regardless. I mean, obviously he plays in cores, so you have to take that into account. But, I mean, he's just a great run producer, great power, contact rates there. I mean, there's nothing really bad we can say about Arenado. And, I mean, Bryant, too, I think. Last year was kind of a strange year for the Cubs, the hangover of winning the World Series. So, I mean, you might think that some of those guys were overvalued maybe a tad last year, and now they're going to be undervalued by that same amount this year, and they kind of meet in the middle again. So, I mean, I'm not saying Bryant's going to be an unbelievable value on draft day, because he's not, but I think people might unfairly be knocking him a little bit just because it was such a weird year with the World Series hangover.
What about you, Evan?
Okay, so I posted this on Twitter, but when me and you, Ben, did the Cubs preview, I absolutely butchered a Chris Bryant stat. Like, I had, like, a meltdown, and so I posted it. I'm going to read it to you guys. So Chris Bryant's home run splits have kind of thrown me off, and it's something I've talked about in previous years, and it's something that, you know, because he didn't have a ton of years in the league, it kind of wanted to see the trend. So in 2016, when he hit 39 home runs at home, he was hitting a home run every about 20 plate appearances, and on the road it was 16.5. And in the odd-numbered seasons where he hit 29 home runs each year in 15 and 17, at home he was 17 plate appearances, so he was actually better. But on the road, he was over 21 plate appearances per home run. We're in 3 years of Chris Bryant. It's 2 years I've seen this as a data point for him, and I don't think it's something to overly exaggerate, but I think it's something that, you know, needs to have a little more of a spotlight shown on it. And as far as Arenado, like, he's got the home road splits too, but at home or on the road, he's still popping 280, and the home runs don't fall off too terribly. So I think he's about as safe as a hitter as you can get in the first round. But I do like the second round price tag on Bryant this year.
Yeah, I think the second round price tag is nice, considering that he has first round capability. Obviously, depends on how big your league is. You know, if you're like in a 16-team league, he's likely to go into first round still, probably. But, you know, what can you really say about Arenado? And Arenado, even on the road, isn't bad. I mean, over his last 162 road games, he's hitting 280. He's got 34 home runs with 102 RBIs. I mean, that's in his last entire year's worth of road games. That's better than most players put up in a regular fantasy season, outside of the, you know, maybe 20 players. So I can't really say, and maybe even 20 is high, but, you know, it's like you said, Evan, he's almost as safe as can come in that first base, or in that first tier. I would say that it's between him, Trout, and Altuve for the most consistent players, and probably Goldschmidt, but obviously because of the humidor, we're not really sure what he's going to be able to produce this year. But those three or four hitters are the most consistent in the first round.
Yeah, and in this first tier, I think they all have, you know, like, you kind of put projections on them to hit, like, the big 35-40 home run seasons. These guys probably have a 25% chance of doing that. Some of these guys later might have, you know, 35 home run upside, but it's probably only a 10% chance. So
yeah, these guys definitely have a nice floor.
Yes. While we move into the next tier, Ray has Jose Ramirez, Donaldson, and Bregman in his second tier. I have Bregman, Justin Turner, Anthony Rendon, Rafael Devers and Miguel Sano in my second tier, and Evan has Alex Bregman in his second tier. So let's go with myself, because players like Anthony Rendon, Justin Turner, Miguel Sano, and Rafael Devers, the reason I put them into the second tier is just because I have them as top 10 options, and I think that while third base doesn't necessarily fall off, and it's probably one of the deepest positions that we could have, I still think that there's a lot of upside in those type of players. Obviously, we know that Devers could be a really special hitter. Sano has a lot of power, and he can be a big power hitter, especially if he stays healthy. Rendon, Turner, Bregman, we've seen what they can do at their best. But, Evan, if you don't mind me asking, what is the reason for only having one player in your second tier?
I think the differentiator between Bregman is the shortstop eligibility, one, and the speed, two, which is something you're not really going to find in a lot of these guys here. So if we're looking at him in the pool of third basemen, then I think those things do create a little shelf for himself there.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. Is there any reason that someone like an Anthony Rendon doesn't make it into your second tier?
He could, but I don't think... I mean, he could put together a package of what, you know, Bregman could over a full season. I don't think that would be too crazy. I don't think Rendon really has the kind of, like, you know, 30 home run potential even really. And I don't necessarily buy the steals as much for him. The injury concern is also kind of a thing. So I guess kind of all those straws may kind of push him down a little bit, but he's a guy that I'm really interested in getting. I think his ADP is probably a little bit low. Like I'd feel comfortable taking him, what, like 45th overall. I'm trying to pull up his ADP right now. Ray, would you like to talk about Anthony Rendon while I find this information?
Sure. The thing about Rendon for me is, I mean, obviously, we've got to be concerned, like I've been said, about him staying healthy, but I think he's gotten better with that. That's in the middle of a very strong lineup, obviously, which I think we have to take into account as well, because that means our RBI opportunities. He's not a 30 home run guy. So, I mean, compared to the other guys, he's more like a 25 home run guy. So that's what knocks him down a little bit tier-wise. And, I mean, I have him in the third tier just because I broke out the top guys into two tiers. Yeah, I'm not really factoring in much in the running game from Rendon, but, I mean, the thing for me is I just like his approach at the plate. I think he makes hard contact, has above-average contact rate, has above-average power. He walks a little bit. He did work on the batting average last year. We saw the expected batting average come up. So, I mean, it depends how much loft he continues to add and maintains with the home run potential. But, I mean, if you're going into it expecting 25 home runs, 85 RBIs, upside for a little bit more if he has another 10 RBI game like he did last year, and I think we're also discounting it with Rendon as far as in the steamer and the projections like that, just assuming that he's going to end up on the DL at least once. So if he's able to keep that kind of quick or he doesn't end up on the DL, I think you're looking at someone that can sneak into the second tier for me.
I mean, for me, I have him in my second tier because the consistency that he's able to give you when he is healthy. And obviously, we've seen injuries from him in the past. But someone who can give you 5 to 10 steals somewhere in that range with a 300 average, 20 to 25 home runs, and, you know, 90 RBIs and 80 runs is pretty consistent. It's as good of a lineup as you're going to have in the National League. Obviously, they're getting Adam Eaton back, so it gives more RBI chance. Bryce Harper, Daniel Murphy being healthy with a full season of Turner and Eaton can only help to those counting stats. Ray depends where he's going to hit in the lineup. It depends if, you know, players behind him have improved in hitting as well. If you have a player like Robles come up and if Wieters hits better, you have a chance for him to even score more runs. I still think that while he did have a couple big games last year, like the one against the Mets, that can help boost his stats, even if you take that out, he still had 90 on the year in terms of RBI. So you know he's going to give you consistent production. Evan, did you find your stat?
He was 53rd, but I feel like I would take him a little bit higher than that. It's not that I don't like Tony Two Bags. It's just that, I feel like I could get his production, or maybe not necessarily his production, but, you know, shades of it a lot cheaper.
What are your guys' thoughts on a player like Miguel Sano? Let's start with you, Ray, because you have him in your fifth tier. So what brings you down on a player like Sano in terms of value?
Okay, so as far as stats, I'm discounting him. Just hypothetically, say he does get suspended for a month, we're going to lose a sixth to a fifth of his stats of whatever you're going to project him for. I mean, obviously, at this point, I feel you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't heard anything about it recently, so I'm not sure. Maybe he won't get a suspension. Who really knows? But that was kind of in the back of my mind. But again, with Snow, spring training, there's still a month to go before the season. Who knows how much he's going to end up DHing, but I think he's still going to have to play the field a decent amount. And, I mean, he really looked more like Eddie Lacy than he looked like a baseball player. So, we're not expecting any speed from him. We really just want the guy to hit home runs and drive in runs. So, I mean, yeah, the power is there, but I'm not sure how much different Sano is from a Joey Gallo. I mean, I know Sano is not going to hit 210 or whatever it is, that he'll probably hit around 240 to 250. But the strikeout's going to be bad. He's going to get a lot of home runs. He should get a lot of RBIs, but I'm just worried about him being a little two-dimensional. Or one-dimensional, really, with just power.
Do you have any thoughts on Sano, Evan?
I did the Twins podcast. Was that with you? I can't recall.
Probably. I did all of them.
It sounds about right. He's just a very powerful guy. If you set the bar at 450 plate appearances, which is where he was at because he didn't get enough plate appearances to be a qualified hitter, his hard hit rate would have been best in fourth for last year and tied for 16th best in the past decade. That's pretty phenomenal. And like I said on that preview, he doesn't get a pass for being a scumbag. I did see the RotoWire update. I believe he met with investigators today, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, I really don't want to get into this anything. I don't think Sano's going to get more than 15 games, personally, as far as the suspension's concerned. Yeah, he's kind of a bigger dude, and he's coming off the shin stuff. But if he gets an extra 2 weeks to sit, that might not necessarily be the worst thing in the world for him. And I think at the discount he's getting, like you said, you compare him to a Gallo, but if Gallo was going to hit 250, where would you take him? Like, so I think that's what we can expect from Sano.
But I mean, also third base is so deep for me too. So I'm not necessarily going to settle with somebody I have question marks on and somebody that's going to be a little bit more of a batting average liability.
While I understand your concerns about him being a batting average liability, I still think that someone like Sano would be able to still potentially improve his 264 average to maybe 275, 280. There's a chance that could also go down to 245, and I totally understand that.
That contact rate, that scares me.
And that's the thing. The contact rate does scare me as well, but at the same point in time, I still think that he's young enough to make some improvements. I think that if he's able to come and be healthy for an entire year, you guys are both players who like the Twins offense in general, or at least like the Twins enough this year. You guys are more of favorites of the Twins than I am. But I still think that Sano could potentially be a 35 home run bat with 90 RBIs and, you know, 85, 90 runs. And I think that could propel him into a top 10 third baseman, even though there is a lot of depth at this position, especially because it is so top heavy. I mean, is there any reason to think that someone like Sano can't be like Jake Lamb with a slightly better average, though?
Oh, Sano definitely could be better than Jake Lamb. Like, I am staying as far away from Jake Lamb, and I know it's a very popular train to be on with the humidor, but
Wait, there's a humidor in Arizona?
Yeah, in case you've been living under one of those cactuses out there. But I think people were already kind of getting off the Jake Lamb bandwagon before the humidor because he sucks against left-handed pitching. And so, I mean, the bump kind of comes from playing, you know, in Chase. I mean, I guess the one thing you can say about Lamb is, yeah, people look at the overall numbers, but if you're in a daily league and you have, you know, the ability to kind of curate his plate appearances, kind of like we were talking about, like Yasmani Grandal at catcher, you can make the average look a little bit better, and Lamb plus replacement might not actually be a bad play if you have the patience to cycle in and out.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, Evan. I mean, that's why I put someone like Sano higher, obviously. What are your guys' thoughts on someone like Rafael Devers, though? Let's start with you, Evan.
Devers, he got a little bit of a look. He's kind of one of those, you know, Ozzie Albies came up and was, you know, one of the extremely talented people to, what stat was it I was looking at? Anyways, he came up, he kicked ass. I think he's going to hit in the middle of a really great lineup, and I do think that there is some room for him to fall back, and I do think his draft price is getting a little jacked up. I don't know, you know, I've seen some mocks where he's gone, like, pick 80, and I think that is kind of scary to me, but if he's going to go closer to the 100 to, you know, 120 range, then I might be a little more apt to hop in. I just have a feeling I'm going to get priced out.
Does someone like a Rafael Devers scare you in any capacity that if he does struggle a little bit when Pedroia comes back that they move Nunez over to third? Or is this someone that you think the Red Sox are just going to let play through any potential issues that he could have with hitting, regardless of how bad he could be, just so that he could improve and work through it on his own?
I think to a point. I think they're going to be patient with him. I think they're going to, I mean, they were kind of patient with Bogarts. They've been kind of patient with Bradley. I mean, I'm not sure that their struggles, I feel like Devers could struggle worse than they did, at least worse than Bogarts did, although Bogarts was a disappointment for a lot of people last year. I think Devers has a solid floor. I think maybe they'll platoon him if he really starts to struggle the second half of the year once Pedroia comes back. But I'm just not sure that we're going to see Devers really, truly take that next step this year. I mean, I think he's more of a 20 to 25 home run guy right now than a 30 home run guy. I think the batting average is going to be pretty good, but I think he's also going to maybe have a slump or two and have some struggles. So I like Devers. I like him more in a dynasty league, but I'm not necessarily running up to grab him because I feel like it might be a year too early.
Why don't we move on to the next tier, in which Ray has Justin Turner, Anthony Rendon, and Adrian Beltre. I myself have Jake Lamb, Mike Moustakas, Kyle Seager, and Travis Shaw. And Evan has Justin Turner, Anthony Rendon, Adrian Beltre, Nick Castellanos, Mike Moustakas, Travis Shaw, and Miguel Sano. So why don't we talk a little bit about Adrian Beltre? What can we expect from, you know, the quote-unquote old man of baseball who's pretty consistent every single time when he's actually healthy? What would you say, Ray?
So what would I say about Adrian Beltre? I would say, number one, don't touch his head. And number two, please DH more this year. Because I, from what I understand, he's a little more open this year to beginning to DH a little more, so that should keep him healthy, maybe keep the hamstring healthy, keep him... I mean, yeah, he's great defensively, but I don't care about that. I just want him to hit the ball, and I think if he stays on the field enough, he's going to continue the solid production. He hasn't really shown many signs of slowing down at the plate.
Do you have anything to add, Evan?
No, I mean, roster resource has Chu pegged as a DH. I definitely think there's room for him to get hurt. There's room for kind of these other players if Willie Calhoun kind of flames out and they got to play roulette in the outfield out there. I mean, I definitely think there's spaces for Beltre to get off third. They could move Gallo back on over there and then have Juris and Profar play first or something along those lines. I mean, I'm going to cry when he's gone because maybe not cry. I'll definitely pour one out for the homie because he's an absolute baller when he's on the field. But it could be something where, if the Rangers aren't going to make a playoff push because, they signed Tim Lincecum today for whatever reason, whatever toads they're licking out there in Texas, or, there's just a number of ways that this could kind of go wrong as far as Beltre, but I am banking on the talent. And I think that if you are like projecting him for a full season, like there's no reason I wouldn't take him over like a Justin Turner or a Travis Shaw. Like I think Beltre is just going to have better numbers over the course of a full season, but I can't predict that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I like Adrian Beltre, and he is a good solid player to add if you're in a deeper league as a third baseman, provided that you have some type of player that could back him up. Someone that could be like Eduardo Nunez or a Suarez or even a Franco or Healy. Players like that could step in and play if needed, but he's someone who's solid when he is, in fact, healthy, so... What about a player like Justin Turner? Obviously, the favorite ginger in the league, or one of them, but Justin Turner, ever since he left the Mets, has been great, as most players have been. And obviously, when Ray and I talked on the Dodgers podcast, we were both disappointed to see that he had left, and we know that Ray and I both are high on a player like Justin Turner, but what are you on Justin Turner, Evan?
I probably listen to the Dodgers podcast. I kill a lot of brain cells, but I'll give you my take. The batting average was kind of floated by what he did against lefties last year. The power department, against lefties, like he hit 11 home runs on 172 plate appearances against them in 2017. For his entire career before that, he had hit 14 in over 770 plate appearances. So I'm not going to compare him to like Neil Walker, but let's kind of say he's got a little Neil Walker lefty magic in him, if that strikes any bells with you, Ben. He had a 364 BABIP against lefties, which you don't factor into the home runs, obviously. But obviously, you look at those two factors together, and they're floating this, so you got to roll him back. And then his production against righties was unsustainable as well. And I know everybody wants to project him to, hit 310 or whatever. But I think once you start kind of rolling him back in certain areas, I'm definitely more on board with where Zips has his power projection of 18 than I am projecting him at anything over 20.
Fair enough. Ray, is there anything you want to add on the player with Justin Turner?
I like Turner. I mean, it was weird that he struggled as a righty, that he struggled against lefties going into last season. But, I mean, obviously it was a good thing that he turned it around. He's on the wrong side of 30. So, I mean, again, we have to be a little bit concerned. Playing time, going in the DL, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, I think his power metrics show that there's maybe a little bit of room for improvement even. But I'm not necessarily complaining with his power. And I just love the fact that he has an above-average contact rate, and he makes plenty of hard contact, too. So to me, that's something that I'm looking for that I think will – that I don't think he's going to lose that from one season to the next, and kind of gives me the edge – gives him the edge for me over someone like Devers, who has yet to prove it. And it's kind of the hot new thing. I'd rather take the old – as we get into the mid to later rounds, I'd rather take the older guy that with not as much buzz that I can get for a better value.
All right. So the reason I was kind of stuttering over myself is because I write myself really complicated notes and I can't figure them out while I'm talking.
Like, you write yourself notes?
My notes would actually be better as articles, but I like to talk, and I really am, like, weird about writing and crap like that.
Well, it's just so, be fair, you're weird in general.
I mean, there's no argument there. So Ray said that he could see the power going up. So you take a look at his power production against righties, which is where he did, you know, notoriously does a lot of his damage, because we talk about his struggle against lefties. He hit 10 home runs off right-handed pitching compared to 22 he hit in 2016. But last year, he was hitting 50% fly balls off of them, which was up 10% from what he did in 2016. But he gave back half of the home runs. So it's just kind of this thing that I'm struggling to wrap my brain around, and obviously more ways than one as I'm reading my notes here. I think it's just something that I need to look a little more into, and maybe as you're listening along, you feel compelled to do the same. Because Ben's not keeping up right now. Ben, as soon as I start talking numbers, Ben just tunes out.
To be fair, it's fun to kind of tune you out. And I'm listening to you. I hear that you're saying that I'm tuning you out and that people should pay attention to stuff, but that doesn't mean I have to pay attention to you, Evan.
Like I said, I understand it's a lot of numbers, and I understand it would probably be better in written form, but this is just how I think, so deal with it.
Fair enough. All right, guys, we're just going to take a short commercial break, and then we're going to jump back in for our next part of the tier. If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit, and you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. All right, guys, why don't we move into our fourth tier? And in our fourth tier, I myself have Adrian Beltre, Nick Castellanos, and Eduardo Nunez in my tier. Ray has Castellanos, Jake Lamb, Moustakas, Seager, and Devers. And Evan has Jake Lamb along with Joey Gallo. So this is the first time we've really got to talk about Joey Gallo in depth tonight. What are your thoughts on Gallo exactly, Evan?
I mean, just, I understand that his batting average is going to kill you, and everybody does too. But also, when you sit down and do your projections and you think about, you know, percentages of what could happen this season, when you think of guys that could hit 45 plus home runs, there's, you know, not a very short list. I mean, it depends on your definition. But I mean, I think Gallo's power, is unmatched across the board. I think there's enough way to build in the batting average risk. And I think we talk about this a lot as far as, you know, guys with tons of swing and miss and tons of strikeouts. But I mean, if they're doing damage when they run into the ball, then okay, yeah, you got to make up for it somewhere else. And if you're not doing that and you end up, you know, losing a league because of it, that's kind of your fault that you didn't understand, you know, the pitfalls of basically the stock you were buying into. So I think if you understand the risk of Joey Gallo and you prepare for it enough, I mean, obviously nothing goes 100% according to plans when it comes to fantasy baseball, but I think that if he's going to get pushed outside of, you know, pick 120 or whatever, I'm trying to look up where he went in our staff league here real quick as kind of a basis, but I just think Gallo, I mean, what do you think the batting average floor? You think he's 175 and shipped out to AAA?
No, I don't think he's that bad. I mean, I think he's probably between, like, say, 215, 225, 230. Yeah. That's kind of where, I mean, probably more towards, I mean, I'm probably planning for 215, 220, but I could see 230, because, I mean, we talked about Sano's contact being bad. Gallo's is even worse. But again, that power is absolutely ridiculous, and he runs into that ball, and that ball goes. He ends up with RBIs. So I mean, like Evan said, as long as you prepare for it, I'm totally fine with taking Gallo. And I mean, then if you're playing in an OBP league, even better.
Yeah, well, if you play in an OBP league, then obviously he's going to jump up my rating rankings, because as much as I'm not a big Joey Gallo fan in a traditional average league, in an OBP league, I actually like him because he does know how to walk. He just doesn't know how to actually make contact with the ball half the time. So that obviously is going to prove an issue, but you know, when he does, he's still capable of being an 80 to 90 RBI guy, 80 runs, 40 home runs, you know, even if he hits 35. That's still a pretty easy floor for him to achieve, and he could even chip in some steals. It's just that average is going to be sub 240. If he actually hit 250, you'd love him. So,
okay, I'm going to play a quick fun game, and you guys count along, and there doesn't need to be any discussion about any of these, but I'm going to read the hitters that went a round after Joey Gallo in our staff league, and you just count, and then at the end we'll reveal how many numbers you would take over him. Are you ready? Here we go. Ryan Braun, Acuna, Ender Inciarte, Moncada, Jake Lamb, Javi Baez, Sano, Marwin Gonzalez. That's eight names I just read you. How many of those would you take over Joey Gallo?
Seven.
Six.
Really?
I'm taking everyone but Moncada over him, and that's borderline.
I'm taking him over Acuna as well.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Acuna could be Acuna's borderline, so I guess put me down for six as well.
But Jake Lamb
training goes.
Yes. I'm taking Lamb over Gallo.
I couldn't do that. Sano, I couldn't do that.
I have Sano one spot higher on my rankings.
I have Sano a bunch of spots higher on my rankings.
Inciarte is debatable depending on what I need. If I need the speed, then Inciarte. If I need the power, then Gallo.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Inciarte is the top 150 pick for me. And I mean, even if he's 175, I don't consider Gallo anything before 210.
Wow. Well, I don't think you're going to get him then.
I probably won't. And I mean, in an OBP league, I'm going to bump him up. But in a regular Roto, which has average, or in a head-to-head league, which has average, I'm probably not taking him. Why don't we move on to the next player, and I kind of want to talk a little bit about Kyle Seager and Mike Moustakas. Obviously, Moustakas doesn't have a team at this time. Where do we expect that he could potentially go? Do we think that he could go somewhere on a one-year deal or a long-term, and what do we expect from him? And then also, what can we expect from a player like Kyle Seager, who has been pretty consistent from year to year? Let's start with you, Ray.
I mean, at this point, I really don't know what Moustakas is going to do. I mean, maybe he ends up going back to Kansas City, but I think at this point they've kind of put the kibosh on 2018. So maybe he ends up in San Diego with Hosmer. Very possible. Maybe he ends up in Philly because they're not really feeling Mikel Franco on a short deal. I don't think the Yankees are going to be able to make it work salary-wise. If not, I think they'd love Moustakas. So, I mean, honestly, I mean, Baltimore would make sense. Try to go for it one more year. I mean, they still have no pitching. But as far as Moustakas as a player, I'd like to see where he signs before I can kind of truly rank him. But I mean, I think overall he's a borderline in a 12 team. I have him as my 12th ranked third baseman. I think he's going to hit for a decent enough average, and he's going to give you some power, some RBI. I think he's a solid option, and the more I think about it, I'd probably move him ahead of Jake Lamb and make him my 11th ranked.
And what are your thoughts on Kyle Seager?
Oh, on Seager? To me, Seager is kind of just... I feel like with Seager, I'm expecting more, and I'm left wanting more. I think he's kind of... at this point, he's 30 years old. I think he's kind of plateaued to what he is, and he's not ever going to hit for a really great average, and he's going to have power that, I mean, it obviously counts for something, but it's not necessarily going to stand out. I think he's a good option at a deep position if you want to wait.
And what about you, Evan? Do you like Kyle Seager as a player to potentially wait on?
I definitely do. I mean, once again, this is a guy maybe a little overdrafted last year, but he was a very solid, you know, 25 home run guy. We haven't gotten to Travis Shaw talk yet, which I find kind of weird because I feel like he's going above all these guys. And, you know, Justin Turner. I don't really have these you know, power concerns with Seager. I bet on him to lead that pack of those three guys in home runs, probably. It looks like he traded off some of his line drives for loft last year, and it definitely, you know, took a toll, especially towards the end of the year. And you look at kind of like, if you take his liners and his fly balls and you make them 100%, he was about 25% line drive, 75% fly balls, and it just absolutely killed him because the BABIP on him's nothing and the home run to fly ball rate wasn't there. But sorry, that was real and nerdy. I think there's way more built into Seager, and I think he's kind of being knocked for whatever reason. Moustakas, as Ben lied to you, is in my third and a half tier because I don't know what to think about where he's going to go. I mean, we saw, you know, the contract that Logan Morrison's season, you know, of 2017 got him, and Moustakas is probably like, what the fuck? I don't, you know, probably need a little more money than that. But I mean, teams should probably be concerned about his power output. I mean, I know he absolutely destroyed pull balls. He was hitting his home run to fly ball rate on pull balls last year was over 50%. His career number up until this point was 25%. And the hard hit percentage was up over 10% of his career numbers. But I don't necessarily know how much I buy into him repeating that. I don't know how much teams do either. And the longer we get into spring training, the more I'm kind of worried about him, and he's probably not going to make it on any of my teams here.
Yeah, as for me, you know, I have no problem getting Kyle Seager as kind of a fallback option at third base because of how consistent he is, and he's probably a bit underrated as a result of that. You know, he's nothing fantastic in terms of like a player like who has a ton of upside, but at this such as Rafael Devers. But at the same point in time, he's got a consistent floor. And while he's not a big highlight reel guy, he's someone that you know that you're going to get consistent average, consistent RBIs, consistent runs, and consistent power. You can't really ask for much more than that at third base, especially depending on how you're building your team through draft. And for a player like Moustakas, I really want to see where he goes, because if he goes to Petco Park, you know, obviously they brought the fences in, so it's not as bad of a power place as it used to be, but there's definitely places I would prefer him in, and he could still go back to Kansas City and wouldn't have an issue with him there, but obviously he's lost Hosmer and Kane from that, and he has less line of protection, but he could now hit higher in the lineup as a result. He could take Hosmer's place in that lineup, and he could still have a pretty decent fantasy season. So, is there any other players that are in the fourth tier that you guys want to cover?
We're not going to talk about Travis Shaw.
I mean, if you'd like to talk about Travis Shaw, we can.
Let's talk about Travis Shaw.
All right. So, Evan, you want to talk about Travis Shaw. Why don't you start?
Well, I mean, he's the mayor of Ding Dong City. I mean, why can't we talk about him?
I thought you were mayor of Ding Dong City.
No. You're thinking of yourself, and that's King Ding Dong. That's what we call you.
Duh.
I mean, there was a lot of hype around Travis Shaw going to Milwaukee. The ballpark was going to help out the left-handed hitter, and it most definitely did. I think as I kind of dove into his numbers a little bit, what's going to regress is his center and opposite field numbers. The home run to fly ball rate was definitely inflated, and he wasn't hitting a ton of fly balls when you look at his previous career. So I don't know if it was just that he didn't have the, you know, number to kind of dilute his ratio. But I mean, when you think about that in, you know, actual terms, I mean, more fly balls could have actually given him better numbers. It's just kind of this enigma, and I don't think people really know where to put Travis Shaw. But once again, like, you know, this range of like 85 to like 125 for a third baseman is kind of the mystery for me and kind of what I'm trying to put my finger on come draft season. But like, who would you rather draft at pick 90? Would you rather draft Travis Shaw, or would you rather draft a guy like Devers? Because right. I think these are, say what you will about the tiers, but when you look at like ADP and where these guys are going, these may be decisions you have to make.
Between the two, I'm probably taking Devers.
Yeah, I mean, it really just depends. I guess I would also lean a little bit Devers, but I do love my Travis Shaw, and I really think that he has the ability to be be a top eight third baseman if everything clicks. I just, you know, I think that there's something really special in Devers.
Okay. I mean, do you want to expound a little more on Shaw? Or just, I love Shaw? Are you Brick Tamlin?
Well, I mean, we know you love Shaw. I mean, to me, I really just kind of, I want to see if he can maintain the home run to fly ball ratio from last year and the batting average. I mean, again, the contact rate seemed a little high in the first half. I kind of just want to, I want to see more out of Shaw, too. And I think as far as pedigree goes, Devers has more of a pedigree than Shaw. I'm not doubting that Shaw's a solid player, but, and they don't really have another option at third base unless they're going to move Lahr there or do something. So, I mean, I guess I kind of want to see more out of both players, so I'm going to go with the pedigree endeavors, but I do think Shaw's a solid option.
I think that Shaw is a really solid option, and, you know, I consider him as close to a top eight player as anyone that's outside of the top 10 right now, if everything clicks, as I was saying before. He's got a lot of power. It's nice that he could actually play some first base, too, if needed. He's got a really good lineup spot. It really just depends on what happens with the lineup. If Braun's able to stay healthy, Kane can stay healthy, Yelich will be there, Santana. There could be a lot of RBI and run production from him. It just depends on how the lineup plays out. It depends on who they play where, if they need to sit anyone. Obviously, injuries for a team like that could come into play, but I think that he's got a good chance to be a top eight if everything clicks. Why don't we move into the last tier, and we're going to each take a player who we think could beat their draft value for this year. So why don't we start with you, Ray?
All right. I am going to go with Eduardo Nunez just for the sake that I think his draft value was maybe a little depressed. Because he was online, we didn't know where he was going to go. Now, obviously, we know he's going to Boston. But then that brings a new concern of, okay, if Pedroia comes back, what's going to happen to Nunez? I think Nunez, since he can literally play just about everywhere on the field, I think they'll be able to keep him in the lineup. I think you have to like that speed. Stolen base is still at a premium. You're going to get 20 to 25 from Nunez with solid batting average if he plays every day. And it's a strong lineup, so he's going to get some runs. I mean, I think he could see some time into the outfield. Jackie Bradley Jr. still a little bit of a question mark to a point. JD, if the foot injury makes it through the whole season, obviously he's going to DH. Then you have Hanley. Who knows how he's going to do making it through a whole season if he has to play in the field. So, and then obviously we've talked about Devers. If they rest him against some lefties, I think Nunez is going to find his way into 450 to 500 at-bats. And to me, that means 20 to 25 stolen bases and all that multi-positional eligibility. So he's so of what's left kind of in my fifth year, he's the one that I'm keying in on a little bit.
What about you, Evan? Who do you think is someone that could beat their draft value?
I'm going to go back to the well of a prediction that I threw out last year. So Eugenio Suarez for the Reds popped 26 home runs last year, 260 batting average. There were parts of the year that he was just downright unbearable and, you know, almost unrosterable. But you take a look at the overall numbers, the walk rate was over 13% last year, which his career total now sits at 9%. So you think about how much that floated his numbers, you know, from his first 3 years. I think people kind of thought he might repeat the double digit steals from 2016. He only had 4. But I think if you take a look back, like, once again, you kind of just post the stat lines or you sit down and you think about what they might do, why would you be so much more excited to draft like a Travis Shaw at pick 90 when you could probably get Suarez around pick, I don't know, I don't have his ADP pulled up. I would say it's well after 200, probably 225, somewhere in that range, even though I think somebody already took him in the staff league, but this is kind of different because it's 18 teams of madness. But I mean, I don't think the numbers could be terribly off and definitely not worth, you know, the price you paid at the draft table. So I like Suarez, and there's, you know, talk about Senzel coming up and playing a shortstop, but, you know, he may start the season off in the minors, and there was talk that Suarez was going to kind of help out at shortstop. So I think he may actually sneak in some eligibility if your games played number is low too, which could be a nice little boost for him.
Ray, did you have anything you want to add on Suarez?
Suarez, I mean, I think he's going to end up sticking at third base because Senzel's going to most likely move to shortstop, at least for this year. I mean, yeah, Suarez is kind of, I guess if you're really, really going to wait at third base, he's a 20 to 25 home run guy with a .260 batting average that you can really, that as far as like a last-ditch effort to fill that spot, it's not necessarily a terrible consolation prize.
Yeah. I mean, who else on the roster? I'm trying to pull up their roster resource page right now, but I don't think, is Senzel going to be on the roster opening day?
I'm not sure opening day. I think it'll be early though.
Okay, so, I mean, you know, they did do the Ben Revere thing, so you're thinking Jose Peraza play shortstop, but, I mean, obviously they're not long for him if Senzel is, you know, I it's just kind of one of those things. I think if you have five games of eligibility in the first, you know, 3 weeks, could Suarez pull that off? Maybe. I mean, and at the price you're getting him at, like I said, nice little cherry on top. Fantasy, it's not fantasy gravy. Justin says fantasy gravy, but sometimes you need the gravy to be good. Like, some mashed potatoes just need the gravy.
I'm not a gravy sprinkles. Guy.
That's, oh, hot take. Hot take.
We always knew you were a little weird.
Oh, yeah, I'm the weird guy of this group. Yeah, please, come on. The player who I think could surpass their draft value is someone like Logan Forsythe, who last year had a lot of injuries, but he's someone that, when he's healthy, has power. He could hit in a good lineup in Los Angeles, and he's able to play multiple positions. So if he is healthy and they need to move players around, he's someone who could move into different spots. And I think that he's someone who possesses enough power that you're going to be able to get him in a late part of a draft that he could potentially give you top 200 value, because he's definitely going outside of that.
He's the kind of dog against right-handed pitching. Hit 16 home runs off him in 2016, but that's more than he's hit, you know, the rest of his entire career. And you definitely look at, you know, his batting average against them. It's kind of woof. So I think he's more of a, you know, platoon guy, as opposed to, like, there's a reason. Didn't they re-sign Chase Utley?
They did re-sign Chase Utley, but at the same point in time, I, you know, 250 at bats for Utley really doesn't make me think that Forsythe isn't someone who could, if he's playing well, could get everyday at bats.
Yeah, you can have Forsythe. I'm not expecting much from him.
Fair enough. All right, guys. Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. And again, we're just kind of getting you ready for the season here. Have the weekly article going up. Have some writing over at Roto Professor as well. And that's about it.
What about you, Evan?
You can find me at FWFB, harassing people, tweeting random stuff, getting psyched over Wreck-It Ralph 2, which is coming out. And you can find me tweeting about the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, which drafts will be starting here very, very soon. And I know we're all very excited. So yes. big shout out to Justin for putting that together, because it's going to be a lot of fun. And even from the outside looking in, I mean, I think this is going to be a really, really big thing in the industry this year.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too, and I'll hopefully be tweeting about it. I always say that I'm going to be more active on Twitter, so we'll see.
And I can be reached at bbrandsfwfb. You can find me and Eric Mackey twice a week on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. You'll also be able to find me on our newest podcast that will be coming out on Saturdays. That will be with Donnie Miller, Colin Weatherwax, and Brad Wells. We will be doing an entire show based around trades. We will be talking about trades that are in the leagues that we're in, trades that you guys send in. If you have trades that you are curious about how we think that they should be handled, if you've already done the trade and you're curious as opposed to what the fantasy impact on that could be, please just let us know. And you'll be able to also find some of our written stuff in our fantasy draft guide, which is just coming out this week. So please go and try to buy your copy of that as soon as possible, because there's a lot
of great Amazon. Fans.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. There's a lot of great fantasy insight in there. It took us all a long, long time to be able to get all that and put it together. So we're proud of our work for that. So for the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason, everyone.